Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 454th edition of the Feuerstein's Fire, excuse me, 453rd edition, excuse me, of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at onceametro.com and the rest of the SB Nation family of websites. Chat room is open. Come on in. Discuss amongst yourselves if you like. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer to the best of my abilities. We are in strange times, my friends. Strange times. And when we see what's been going on with society today, and I'll be honest with everyone, even for myself, I am in a situation where I never thought I would be in. You would read the history books. You would hear the stories. You would listen to everything and anything that someone would come up to you and tell you what happened back in the day, or certain things that have happened while you were alive, but they were taking place in a different part of the world. You never thought it would reach here. Well, it has. The coronavirus, or COVID-19, is here in our nation. I'm trying to be the voice of reason here when I am going to tell everyone, please stay calm. Please remain calm. Please don't lose your heads. We will get through this. It may take a while, but please do not lose your heads, and please do not run to the grocery store, the supermarket, and rip everything off the shelves and then take it back home as fast as you can. This is a scary thing. This is a tough thing of what we are going through here. But one thing is for sure, and it has to be said. Is that everything will be fine. Everything will be okay. We just have to remain calm. It's easy as it's as easy as it sounds, but the truth is that it's not easy. It's hard. And while I am part of the media, I'm part of the sports media. The political media has taken this way too far. Yes, we must be diligent. We must be aware. We must remain calm, and we must take care of ourselves and those of us, either friends of ours, family members, even those that are in the elderly department. We must remind ourselves that not everybody will be immune to this. I truly believe that this situation will get through it. We will pass. But we cannot lose our heads. We have to keep our heads above water. Keep our wits above us. We cannot assume that the world is ending, because that is what gets us into trouble, folks. This is a serious thing. This is a very serious thing. Major League Soccer has canceled, or shall I say, suspended the season for 30 days. The CDC, the Center of Disease Control, has said now 8 weeks to not convene in arenas, stadiums, the beaches, to prevent the spread of the virus. There is now officially a curfew in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut that everyone must be home by 8 p.m. Restaurants are now not allowed to have people dine inside. You can they'll still bring the cooks in to work, but now it has to be delivery or takeout orders. We are in a situation, my friends, where this game is global. It's nonstop. 24/7. We have never, ever been in a situation, nor have I ever been in a situation like this in my life. This is very scary, but it should not be scary enough where we assume that the sky is falling, we're like chickens with our heads cut off. Everybody has gone bananas. We have to just remain calm. Do your jobs. Run your daily lives. Be vigilant and be aware and just keep your head above water. Do what you have to do. Wash your hands. It's really simple. Wash your hands. If we cannot do the simplest of things, then this whole situation will overtake us. I watch as many YouTube videos as I can on this subject. I read as many articles as I can through my laptop, through my computer, my smartphone, tablet. It's hard. It's very hard to see what's going on here. It's hard that the Premier League has stopped. Serie A has stopped. The Bundesliga has stopped. It's the Serie A has stopped. Now, Liga MX has stopped. MLS, USL, NISA, NPSL, that has stopped. CONCACAF suspending their tournaments. The Champions League is stuck with three quarterfinal matches, first legs down, one to go, and a second leg. All four second legs need to be played and rescheduled. The Olympic qualifiers in CONCACAF suspended. The U.S. Open Cup suspended. A tournament that's near and dear to my heart suspended. The UEFA Champions League suspended. This coronavirus has stopped the world. Panic has stricken all over this nation, our neighbors, our friends, our allies. And all I can do talking to you today in this intro monologue is to just remain vigilant, remain strong, mentally strong, and just use common sense. Don't assume that this whole situation is going to end the world. It won't. I believe there will be a cure for this. I do believe there will be a cure created for this. I truly believe that the private sector and the public sector in the pharmaceutical industry will come together and they will create a cure for this. The time to point fingers of who started it, where it got started, it's over with. It's a pandemic. It's everywhere on this earth. We just have to remain vigilant. We just have to stay. We have to stay calm, folks. We have to stay calm and just move on with our lives. Be vigilant, be aware, but please be calm. It's been a couple of days for myself. I have kept calm. It's been a little rough, but the truth is that I am doing my best, and I know you will do your best to keep calm in this situation that we are all in. We're all in this together. All we have to do is remain calm, and this shall pass. This is how I feel. And in my opinion, this is what we all need to do. Remain calm, and we will overcome it. Very simple, folks. It's a very simple thing. I know for a fact it's going to be difficult. But I really believe that we will endure this and we will succeed when this thing is defeated. That's how I personally feel. So, like I said, just do yourself a favor. Wash your hands. No matter how long you take to wash your hands, do so. If it has to be more than 20 seconds, that's fine. It's not a problem. Just remain vigilant, remain calm, and everything will be just fine. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight, as everybody knows, because of the situation with the coronavirus, the Four Seasons Fire American Soccer Show will be reduced to an hour. But that's okay because we got a great subject for tonight. As everybody knows, Carlos Cordero has resigned as the president of the U.S. Soccer Federation, all due to the effect of, let's just say, it's not really a tiff, it's really an embarrassment of how the U.S. Women's National Team has been treated. And it's just been absolutely a horror show to see this federation completely dropping the ball. It's just been terrible. Joining me right now, once again, one of the most renowned soccer writers of our time, Michael Lewis, Front Row Soccer, of course, New York Newsday, and of course, the former women's head coach at Rutgers University and the current analyst of New York City FC Radio, Glenn Crooks, joins me. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. It's been a while, I know, but a lot to get underway here. Michael, when you learned the news that Carlos Cordero has stepped down as president of U.S. Soccer, in your mind, what did you think about this? I would have to say that I'll be honest with you, Michael. It's a disappointment that even though it's only been 2 years he's been president of our federation, I don't think he did the job that many people thought he should have done.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I mean, when you ask what was the first thing in my mind, well, there's a lot to unpack there. First of all, he resigned on Twitter. He never told anyone in the communications department of U.S. soccer that he was resigning. And that tells you a lot about the man. I think, you know, he was still working for U.S. soccer at the time. He should have given them the courtesy of letting them know instead of waiting 2 hours before they got an official press release out. You know, it did not surprise me that he resigned, given that how derelict he was in his duty as president, particularly with this one situation, the lawsuit papers that were filed. He admitted he did not read it. And when you're the president of an organization such as U.S. Soccer, you better make sure you read everything. No excuse whatsoever.
Absolutely, Michael. It was just a travesty what happened. Glenn, you were in charge a long time ago turning girls into women when they were playing at Rutgers for the women's soccer team. How disappointed are you that this man basically, I don't know if he turned a blind eye, but I think he basically was a wolf in sheep's clothing when it came to the situation of the women's need to be paid at the same level as the men do.
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated. I mean, I think one of the things to look at closely here, there were many women on that athletes council that in 2018 voted as a block, and it was some very contentious meetings between that group. I don't know if you remember, Michael, but and I was down there at the AGM. I mean, they were supposed to be at things, and their meetings went longer. It was past midnight, because they traditionally voted as a block, and that they were the deciding vote for Carlos Cordero. So the Athletes Council is in many ways very much the reason he was voted president in the first place. Again, I don't know how everybody in that room felt, but they came out as one, which is the way they wanted to. And then ultimately, you'd have to say things didn't really change. And he's been with U.S. soccer since 2007 in some capacity. And this is fairly longstanding. I go back to here's what I think about U.S. I've got a lot of things with U.S. soccer. And look, to suggest that they haven't established some things that have been beneficial for the game of the United States, you know, would be wrong. But they are a group that has reacted as opposed to serving as leaders. And a perfect example is that the U.S. men's national team is traveling all over the place for all their games, years ago on charter flights while the women are in coach. That is a very, very simple thing to recognize. Understand the big difference between those two things and how you're treating the women much differently than the men. It's a simple thing. And then when the women brought it up and they made noise about it, next thing you know, now they're taking charter flights. They made a big deal about playing on artificial surfaces where the men would never play on artificial surfaces or play on a field like they had they decided not to play on in Hawaii. One of those, I don't even remember what game it was, but they went to the field. They said, we're not playing. And the fact that U.S. soccer would permit that. It's been happening all along, and U.S. soccer's response is always, our women get more than the women in any other country. And I despise that sort of reasoning when it comes to equality.
I'll tell you, Michael, it just feels like ever since the failure of qualifying for Russia for 2018, the U.S. Soccer Federation has been going backwards, Michael. It feels like they have done things the wrong way. As soon as Sunil Gulati stepped down as president of U.S. Soccer, and then they have this whole this whole voting time at the AGMs in Orlando at that time, you know, Carlos Cordero was the man to take over. He was the one that was voted on to becoming the brand new president of this federation, where sadly it's still a volunteer position, but still, this man was supposed to lead U.S. soccer into a new chapter, and sadly, it's fallen apart.
Well, he first of all, Carlos Cordero was an insider in many ways because he was a vice president. And even though people said, oh, he's going to be the same as Sunil Gulati, those two did not get along. I know that from some really good sources. But when you talk about U.S. soccer going downhill, when they didn't qualify, when the U.S. men's did not qualify for Russia, actually, I thought the team was going downhill when Sunil Gulati extended Jurgen Klinsmann's contract before the end of the 2014 World Cup. I don't think you do that for a coach. You wait until a coach, wait until a team plays in a big tournament like that. And I really think from there on in, things just got worse and worse and worse. And we don't have to go through every step about that. You know, U.S. soccer has a lot on its table on the table right now. Besides the women's lawsuit, they still have the NASL lawsuit. They're trying to look for a successor to Dan Flynn, who retired last year. In September, I think he stepped down, and here we are more than six months later, and they still haven't found anyone. And granted, I know the coronavirus, that puts things in a different orbit, and it's probably in a different galaxy right now, but they have so much on their plate right now, and I just feel like every time they try to roll the boulder up the hill, it falls back down again. Sometimes it's they're doing, sometimes it isn't. And I'm trying to figure things out here. What the heck is going on there? I mean, the men can't get out of their way in many big games in CONCACAF. Meanwhile, the women just keep on chugging along, having a ridiculous either winning streak or unbeaten streak, two consecutive world championships. And I agree with Glenn, they deserve better. And it's mind-boggling the way they've been treated. And this goes all the way back, by the way, when they got secondhand uniforms, men's old uniforms, way back 30-some-odd years ago. But that's another story for another time.
Yeah, that's very true, Glenn. This is from the lawsuit, or at least from U.S. Soccer. This was read on ESPN FC when this whole situation happened. I don't mind reading it again. The women do not perform equal work regarding equal skill and effort to the men because the overall soccer playing ability required to compete at the senior level of the men's national team at their level is materially influenced by the level of certain physical attributions such as speed and strength. You know, Glenn, to me, that's a slap in the face to the hard work that all of our women do, whether it be in the collegiate game, the NWSL, the past women's leagues like WUSA, like, of course, the USL Women's League, AYSO for the girls, high school, and even for the national team level. To me, Glenn, that's a slap in the face that should never, ever have been uttered at all. And in my book, Glenn, it's just absolutely disgusting that our own federation would use that as an excuse for their stupidity.
Well, you use certain strategies to try to win things. I think it's well beyond a slap in the face. That sort of reasoning, that a man in that deposition would say these things, my former player, Carly Lloyd, she was in the midst of all that, along with Alex Morgan, where they asked her if she thought that the women could beat the women's national team could beat the men's national team. And using that in that quote, what was it? The science proves it, because Carly at one point in there said, well, once we we train against boys, but once they're and the national team boys, but once they're 16 or 17, you know, it's no longer advantageous for us because they are, you know, they're faster, they're stronger. And that's one of the reasons you, Carly, when she would prepare for national camps at Rutgers University, I always let her train with the men. You know, that was great preparation for her. But you know, she, and it really got her ready, and they really respected her. But, you know, you compare her as one of the best players in the country at that time on the women's side, and the men would, you know, overtake her a lot in those training sessions at Rutgers. So you can't – when you start comparing those two and making that part of your case, the level of sexism, misogyny, and absolute is it macho, is it – you know, all the different things that perturbs me about men who feel that way about women, about people that feel that way about anybody that's different than them. You know, to me, the women, you put them in with – they're the minority for these men who run things. And men run soccer for the most part. And I think that's the more – I think it's more sociological. It has more importance there than just, you know, the women of the NWSL, the U.S. Women's National Team, that in this day and age, that case is brought in that manner is that's the more disturbing thing for me. And it's scary. It's very scary.
No, it really is. And it's just something where, you know, the strides that women have made, Michael, in our country, no matter, you know, what position, what job they do, whether it be in the workforce as a doctor, you know, in construction, a teacher, you know, even in television production, in the written media, of course, where you and I are, of course, and, you know, many other things, that this situation is still out there. I thought we've grown up from this. I thought we've learned from our past, but I guess there's still some issues in certain places of the world.
Well, the human race does have its great moments, but sometimes we could be dumb. And you could use another adjective right after that. I'm not going to use it on the radio show. And men could be very, very stupid as well, too, and not learning from the past. You know, I've been around the block and then some. I remember when women's liberation started up in the late 60s, early 70s. And, yes, they've come a long way since then, but there's so much more to go from here to there. And the misogyny that's still around in society and in soccer is mind-boggling. Back at the, if I'm not mistaken, at the 1999 World Cup qualifying draw in Tokyo, I had the privilege of attending that and covering that. Sepp Blatter talked about having women play in tight shorts or in skirts because he thought it would be is sexier, that sort of thing. And we just could not believe he would say something like that in 1999. And I know that's, well, that's 21 years ago. And it was mind-boggling. And I think Julie Foudy might have been at that event, and she was could not believe what had been said. And, you know, if you – I'm not going to get the quote right, but if you don't learn from your mistakes in the past, you're going to bungle up your future. And I really think that's been a major problem in the world and and in many respects in U.S. soccer. And again, you take a look at the accomplishments of the U.S. women's team that has given the sport, put it into a different orbit for many, many people out there. I don't think you'd have as many soccer fans if the U.S. women hadn't been around and hadn't won 4 World Cups and 4 Olympic gold medals, which is astounding. Not even the great Brazilian teams have done that in that short period of time. But it is, you know, like I said, you can have a lot of dumb people in this world. They might be smart in terms of knowing how to run a business or get good grades in college, but oh boy, common sense, it boggles the mind.
Hey, Dan,
it really does.
I just want to say I've been around a long time too. I remember when Michael had a full head of hair.
You know what the sad thing is?
I remember when he had a mustache.
Yeah, very good.
I want
the way it
Michael.
Goes,
I remember, yeah, I know what you mean. Michael, just to let you know, I remember that quote, and I think he called them hot pants. I think that's what it was, or hot shorts. I think that's what unfortunately Sepp Blatter said at that time, which of course you should never have said that, but then again, dirty old man,
guys,
what are you going to do with these
but
days?
Guys, but look at the women do have some power, and it really came into play. So from what I remember, Grant Wall put out an article and he called for the immediate resignation of Carlos Cordero. So I remember seeing that. And then I remember seeing Abby Wambach and Michelle Akers and then Heather O'Reilly give their endorsements, fully agreeing. And those are three of the great women in our game who not only were great players, but the way they carried themselves and the way that they represented. And one of them, Michelle Akers, was a big part of the beginning of things. She was on the national team in 1985 when it was born. Nobody remembers that. She was on that first world championship team in 91. And, she's a true pioneer. So when they came out and their voices, I think, were an overriding factor as to why Carlos Cordero stepped down. I mean, let's face it. If you didn't get that kind of reaction from those sorts of figures, it may have really not happened, you know. And I'm so disappointed in Cordero. I mean, he's a first-generation immigrant. His mom was Colombian. His father, Indo-Portuguese. He arrived in Miami at the age of 15. You know, he's put into this high school situation where he doesn't know anybody. He's got to fit himself in, and he builds his way. Harvard Business School, Goldman Sachs. You know, I mean, you know, the guy, he was somewhat self-made, you know, and how he really got himself into our situation in the States, which is, right, the American dream. You get here, you're successful. And for him to not have a greater understanding and appreciation, and you're right, Michael, you said at the top, the fact he didn't read any of this or didn't, you know, he's complicit just based on the fact you can't live off of ignorance on this one. And I think as a leader, how you delegate is important. So I don't think good leaders don't have to micromanage because they have the proper people underneath them. But something is sensitive to that. He needs to read every word and needs to know every single thing going on, that understanding the history of the women and their relationship with U.S. soccer, which hasn't been very good. Just talk to Julie Foudy. And go back to when they got $10 a day meal money in 1991. No, they didn't get any meal money in 91. I think their next World Cup, they got $10 a day. They were they were not treated with respect, man. They just weren't. They were women playing soccer. It's not a women's sport. It's a man's sport. That was the thinking back then. We were there, Michael. We weren't in China. I don't know if you were in China. I wasn't in China, but there was no coverage of this event. None. They came back. People had no idea what had happened. Nothing. So those women deserve everything they get.
Well, like I said, I go back a ways. I was at JFK when the U.S. women came back, and maybe there were two journalists there. And, fortunately, it was in the New York area, and they were just very, very tired from a 52-hour trip. Yes, a 52-hour trip. From China, just because they were dropping off teams on the way back, which is mind-boggling unto itself.
Right. But Michael, was the president of the federation who from U.S. Soccer was there? There were two people, right? Who were they?
Let's see.
Bora Milutinovic, yeah. The men's coach, right?
Right.
He was there.
Right.
And Tom Meredith, who was like,
okay.
I don't know what his. I don't recall what his position was at the time, but it wasn't vice president or president. They weren't even the head of the federation wasn't even there to greet him.
Wow.
That's what they've been dealing with, man.
By the way,
that's amazing.
Speaking of eating, Julie Foudy once told me they learned how to eat a lot of Snickers, because they got it for free from at the various tournaments, which is ridiculous for a diet for one of the best athletes in the world. This is way back in the 80s and 90s as well, too, which, again, I hate to use the word, but it's mind-boggling.
You know, it really is. It's really terrible what they've had to go through. And it's not just Cordero, who is derelict in his duties, gentlemen. This board of governors, or the board of directors for U.S. soccer, has been absolutely guilty in their own end. Athlete representatives in this board of directors, Carlos Bocanegra, Lori Lindsay, Chris Ahrens, pro council representative, sadly it's Don Garber, that's involved with adult council representatives, Richard Moeller, John Moda, I don't know if the youth council is a part of it, but, you know, at large representative Mike Cullina, independent directors Juan Uro, there's Lisa Carney. I mean, there are some women on this board of directors, gentlemen, that you would like to think that they would be on the side of these players. And, you know, Patty Hart, Linda Walke, there's Brian Remedy, Pink Reina, Tanya Wallach, and even Ernie Stewart is on this. I mean, it's just unthinkable that some of these women on this board might be, I don't know, towing the company line. I mean, I don't think it's all of them, but it feels like it might be. What do you think, Glenn?
Well, I know Lori Lindsay quite well. I've done some broadcasting with her and become friendly with her. I've actually tried to get a hold of her since all this went down. I think she's in a pretty difficult position. At some point, I'll talk to her. I don't want to speak for any of those people. I don't know three quarters of the people you just rattled off. So all I can tell you is that it's a minority of women on this board. And, you know, that might play a role in some of this as well. But it's not just this equal pay issue and how the women have been treated. I mean, how about the process for hiring the new U.S. men's national team coach after the disaster that happened before? And I thought, bringing Bruce Arena, and I was all for bringing Bruce Arena back. And, you know, whatever you want to say about how Arena handled it, my biggest thing with Arena is I wish he would have taken a little bit more accountability. It didn't work, and he played a role in that. But the fact that Tab Ramos, whatever they think of him, you know, deep down and some of the reasons why, but the fact that he was not interviewed. Folks, he was not interviewed for the position of new U.S. men's national team coach after going through four cycles of the U-20s and doing better than any other coach had done in that situation, has coached almost all of the guys that would be within this U.S. men's national team unit, the pool. And then you've got Greg Berhalter, who no one else was interviewed, as far as we know. I mean, that's never come out publicly, I don't think, Michael, you know, where that's really been, you know, anybody has said that on this board, or, you know, it was just never said, but those are the reports, the people. And I know Tab Ramos was not interviewed, that I know. And again, whether he was the best guy for the job or not, how do you not interview him? I mean, seriously. And this is the level of arrogance. And here's one other thing I want to tell you, Michael, when I retired from Rutgers University in 2014, that's when I really started diving in all this, not just the men's side, women's side, but also the men. And now I host this coach education player development show on SiriusXM. So I'm out. I'm talking to a lot of people, and the one word that sticks out to me ever since I really dug deep into the soccer in the country and everything else in regard to the federation is arrogant. That with capital letters, DOCs, anybody that's had to deal with them, and that's And I, that is the anti-leadership word, arrogant. You don't lead with arrogance anymore. You just don't. I mean, you know, autonomous, no collaboration. When the DA was applied to the women in 2017, very poor. And it is a disaster on the youth side. Kate Margraff's got a lot of work to do. It is a disaster on the women's side, U.S. soccer, youth national teams, the development academy. It is a disaster. They had the top six clubs in the country, most of them reluctantly joining the DA just to try to support and get it going. And families, coaches didn't work for a lot of different reasons. Those top six clubs are no longer in the development academy. They're all elite clubs nationally. And there's an ECNL boys now. And I can tell you there's a lot of boys directors across the country that are not big U.S. soccer fans. And
Michael, I'm sorry, go ahead, Glenn.
We're in tough shape, man.
We are. Michael, I mean, going to back to what he said about Tab Ramos, I mean, Tab Ramos was never interviewed. Jesse Marsh, when he was with the New York Red Bulls, was not interviewed. Peter Vermees, what he's done with Sporting Kansas City, was not interviewed. I mean, there were reports that outside of Berhalter being the chosen one, that they claim they've interviewed Oscar Pereja, who's now manager of Orlando City. But once again, Michael, you know, nothing against Greg Berhalter, but, you know, when you're not doing a real coaching search to take over, and at the same time, and I agree with Glenn, Tab Ramos, four cycles of the U.S. under-20s, and you consistently make it to the quarterfinals in each and every one of those cycles that Tab Ramos was a part of. How do you not interview like him for the U.S. men's national team for what he has done for his country? You don't give him the opportunity to ask him, what would you do, you know, with the senior men's national team? It's unfathomable to see Tab Ramos thrown to the side. Go ahead, Michael. I apologize.
I apologize for interrupting you. I have to admit I am biased about Tab Ramos. I've known him for over 30 years. I remember when he started out as a national team player and grown up as a coach. I think he has one of the great soccer minds in this country. Just as important, he knows how to handle people and players. And it, I did not understand why he did not at least get an opportunity to show the Federation what he could do or what his plans would be for the next level. I still think he will be a national team coach, the U.S. national team coach someday. But Tab Ramos not getting an opportunity to have that that interview, I just don't understand it. I mean, that's a gimme. Again, someone else is chosen. Okay, give that person a chance. But I just think it was a great opportunity to bring in someone who is well known in the U.S. soccer community, someone who's well respected, someone who's well spoken, and someone who's outspoken too. Tab has never been one to hide his opinions. And I think it was a lost opportunity for U.S. soccer not getting him in for an interview, and I have to admit, not hiring him as well. Like I said, I'm biased. I've known Tab. I've seen him grow as a soccer person. He's more than just another good player out there. I think he's going to show that he's a very good coach, hopefully when MLS starts up again, whether it's in May, June, or whatever.
Yeah, that's the hope there, Glenn, that once MLS gets back into the swing of things and hopefully some of these matches that have been lost due to this whole coronavirus, they get rescheduled, hopefully. We'll see what the plans will be from the league somewhere down the road. But, you know, that's the shame of it all is that, you know, you've got some pretty damn good people as head coaches Jesse Marsh now in Red Bull Salzburg in Austria. And, you know, he nearly Salzburg on a blink of an eye, nearly into the round of 16 of the UEFA Champions League. Of course, he had to get through Liverpool, and that didn't happen. But still, though, what he got from that Salzburg team in Austria in the first in the Austrian Bundesliga has been amazing. How he's not, you know, at least also being given an opportunity for an interview for the number one national team, you know, within this – I shouldn't say number one, but, you know, the highest position in this nation as a head coach of our national team. How does Jesse Marsh not get an interview like Tab Ramos, like Peter Vermees, like some of these other great head coaches we've had that are on the same level or just above it, like Bruce Arena and Bob Bradley?
I don't know. He said Don Garber's on the board. Maybe Don Garber was still pissed at Jesse for kicking David Beckham in 2000. What year was that? They had that Beckham, you know, all this stuff that's playing now. It's Look, we're in this pause. We're all probably sitting at home, not going out too much right now, and, you know, getting a chance to see what the networks and what they're deciding to do. So FS1 played some things today, including the Beckham special, which I had never seen before. It was an hour long. It just reviewed his whole history in MLS and the whole thing, and really well done. And but what stood out to me is I had forgotten Jesse Marsh, who they were going at it a little bit, and then Beckham like burst past him, and Marsh took him down by kicking him from behind, and a little bit of a argument ensued. And you know, that's the way Jesse Marsh plays. That's the way he coaches, and he's done that with success.
Absolutely. Well, now that we're getting through all this fun stuff here, gentlemen, Cindy Parlow Cohn is now the acting president of U.S. Soccer. She has been put into this position by the board of directors. We know she was a great player during her time, but now she's now in the spotlight. And I want to go to you, gentlemen, first, Michael first, and then Glenn. Your thoughts on this appointment?
Well, actually, it's not really an appointment. She ascended into the role. Some people are calling her the acting president. To me, she is the president until the next election. You know, I just hope she has I don't know too much about Cindy's political background. I know, you know, she used to coach the Portland Thorns. Had some other, I think, managerial roles as well, too. I know she's a good leader, but when you get into U.S. soccer, the politics gets very, very murky. And maybe her presence will change things, and maybe she could, for lack of better words or phrases, make a deal to at least, let's say, get the women's situation out of the courts and into a handshake agreement, although I guess we're not allowed to do handshakes at the moment, but because of the coronavirus. But seriously, you know, I think people are going to be looking at her to move forward with that, to get out of the big hole U.S. soccer is in. I'm talking about publicity-wise concerning what transpired last week. You know, again, I don't know. It's easy for us to say from the outside, oh, she should do this, and this because she's a former member of the U.S. national team. But the politics in U.S. soccer could be very, very murky. Even if she is the leader, if she doesn't have enough people on the board on board with her ideas, that's going to be tricky. And I think that might be her greatest challenge, to convince people saying, hey, we've got to do this, and this. One other thing I'll say just about the lawsuit. I know the U.S. women are asking for $66 million, and I am probably one of the last people who should ask about lawsuits. But one thing I've learned in general, just from looking at these things, when you start bargaining, you bargain from an extreme and you're ready to give back something. So I really don't think the U.S. women are expecting $66 million, but perhaps something in between, and I'm not going to say a figure, but hopefully both sides could come to an agreement much sooner than later.
Well, what's really interesting about that line of thinking too, Michael, and I go back to U.S. soccer and their ability to control this much earlier. And if I go back to the charter flight example, I mean, that could have been something that they looked at, understood it was wrong. And I don't think the women ever would have said, you know, bring us from 0 to 10 with one thrust of the wand or one wave of it, because people will be reasonable if you recognize there's inequality and you're making movement to rectify that. The only movement U.S. soccer has ever made to rectify that, the inequities, is when there's been public outcry or outcry from the women. And that's what I'm talking about. And there may be exceptions to that. And, you know, maybe the communication staff of U.S. soccer will put something out that could deflect that sort of thinking. But that's the way I've always seen it. They react as opposed to lead, in this case, for the women and equal pay. So the women got to a point where, you know, whether anybody thinks they're right or wrong with their exact legislation here and their demands, that's beside the point now. They're making a statement that, look, you've ignored a lot of the things, or you wouldn't act on things, you know, and help us, you know, on your own. So we're going to tell you this is what you owe us. So I appreciate their fight. And I think it's got a global impact at the same time, and not just global in terms of soccer, but just in terms of women in the workforce, and where women still in this country, right, Michael? In this country, women get paid less overall for doing the same job as men. I think it's something like 89 cents to the dollar, whatever it is. If it's not equal to the dollar, then it's too little. So it's just, I don't get it. But that's because the men run things, man.
You're not going to get me into an argument about that. Don't worry.
Well, I know your wife. I know your wife, so I know that.
No, but I learned many, many years ago when I was 9 years old, and basically, you know, long story for another time. I won't waste the radio time on it, but to me, you know, just put yourself, you know, if the roles were reversed, simple as that, what would you think?
Yep.
Yep.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Glenn, what was your opinion, though, if Cindy Parlow-Cohn, now as president of U.S. Soccer, what's your thoughts about that?
To be honest with you, the very first thing I thought of, and she played for Anson Dorrance, and I know they still have a good relationship, and Anson Dorrance, he and U.S. Soccer have a very contentious relationship for a number of reasons. This development academy is one of them, led by April Heinrichs. He, you know, he coached April in that 91 Women's World Championship, and at one point they were, you know, they were on the same page. Well, that deteriorated over the years when April moved into a leadership position. So that was actually the first thing I thought of. It's like, wow, you know, Anson's not a big fan of U.S. soccer. And if does she take, you know, I don't know her. And all you can do is read about her as far as her ethics, the kind of person she is. I think she might very well be the proper female for this position. And I hate to put it in those terms, but she can maybe gather some steam and do it in a way where it really, she includes everybody. It's a collaborative thing, women and men combining and coming to a decision. Michael said that maybe it's important for her to get a settlement on this lawsuit so that you get some good feedback between the women and the federation. And that could very well be. I don't know how that all works. I don't know what kind of she is the president, and she was the vice president, so she becomes the president when the guy resigns. I don't know where Sunil Galati fits in because he was an advisor to the board. Is he no longer now part of that because of this transition? There's a lot of things I'm not up to speed on. But from everything I've heard about her, she's smart. She's strong. She was a very good coach. She was the director of a club. So she's had a lot of experience, you know, at the, both the elite level and also in the grassroots. When you direct a club, man, you gotta really be in charge of what your coaches are doing and what's happening in development. So she could very well be perfect for that position.
Yeah, we'll see what happens, and hopefully she'll do a great job, not just for the women, but for the men. Do you gentlemen think that the president of U.S. Soccer should still remain as a volunteer position, or do you think it's time that the president of U.S. Soccer is a full-time paid position? Because to me, I just feel like the board has failed. I feel like the board has failed every single corner of this nation when it comes to finding men, women, boys, girls for our national teams and giving them a fair chance to compete for those spots. And we've seen it the last couple of years, and it doesn't matter who they are, you know, men, women, boys, girls, white, black, Hispanic, Asian, Hindu, Indian, Native American, Indian, wherever they come from, Arab, it doesn't matter. If you are considered one of the best players of our nation, you should be on this national team. And I just feel like board of directors has failed us, and they've failed us very badly. We'll go to Michael first, and then we go to Glenn.
Well, their decisions, some of their decisions have been head scratchers. I think they've done some good things for soccer in the United States, not maybe necessarily always good for U.S. soccer. In terms of the women, again, that has been a head scratcher. I just don't understand why they haven't moved forward as much as they have. You know, the thing you have to remember with U.S. soccer, and when you're dealing with elections, is how things are broken down. And if you can get a majority of the pro leagues and the athletes council, you literally control the elections there, particularly for the highest offices. That's what happened the last time in Orlando in 2018. So right then and there, you've got two major voting blocks that if they come together, that's virtually, 45, almost 50% of the vote. And then you just need a little of the youth and the amateur, because both of them will rarely vote as a block. So I really think that's where some of the problems of U.S. soccer comes from as well, too. I could have a longer answer. I know we're running out of time. But
Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, well, part of that, back to the Athletes Council that Michael was talking about, you know, that block is so important. Here's what Charles Bohm wrote for Pro Soccer USA after Cordero was voted president in 2018 after the AGM. That's where the vote was. Quote, "The voters with the heftiest soccer resumes," that is the Athletes Council, "effectively determine the winner. And ironically enough, their choice was the only candidate of the eight running who didn't play the game at an international, professional, or collegiate level." Now, is that vital? Well, as I pointed out, Cindy not only, you know, played the game at a high level, World Cup, Olympics, North Carolina winning national championships, and then directing a club in North Carolina and coaching in the NWSL successfully. She wasn't a candidate. But I'm just saying, is that important? And then Stu Holden, who's part of that Athletes Council, his quote after everything was over, quote, "We got a candidate we can unify behind." And so you don't always make the right choice, apparently, and none of us do. And I wonder if that council, as they look back, regrets not, you know, putting Kyle Martino forward. Or was that or was Martino never going to get in? Was it going to be Kathy Carter from some? And maybe the council said, well, if we don't go for Cordero, Kathy Carter gets in, and maybe she's less the person who we think will have the experience, you know, the proper experience to do the job. I don't know. Or Kyle Martino. We can't – or Eric Winalda. I mean, it seemed apparent the athlete council was never going to be behind Winalda, but I think there was some push for Martino. I don't have any inside information on that other than kind of getting a feel for it. But why not Kyle Martino? Why not?
Why not? Absolutely. Gentlemen, thank you very much for coming on the show tonight. I really appreciate it. Hopefully we get back to seeing each other again when this whole situation is over with. And I miss you guys already anyway. So, but still, though, thank you for coming on, for your opinions, and hope to talk to you again soon. Have a good night, gentlemen. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a good night.
Thank you, Dan.
All right. Michael Lewis, FrontRowSoccer.com, as well as New York Newsday. Glenn Crooks, New York City FC radio analyst, also the former head coach of the Rutgers women's national team. Excuse me, Rutgers women's soccer team. And that will be it for tonight. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening to me. Join me next week. More great topics coming up very soon here on the Four Seasons Fire American Soccer Show. For Michael Lewis and Glenn Crooks, I'm Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you for listening to me tonight. And as always, please enjoy your football. Thank you. Take care. So long, everyone. And have a good night. Bye-bye for now.